All right. I think we're going to get started here.
Go.
I know.
Go. Start talking. No, go.
All right. I'd like to welcome everybody to the... Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Thursday, March 20th regular meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. We had an executive session and some training earlier, so we've already called the roll. So at this point, we are just going to be saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And let's see, where's the flag?
You're right.
There it is. All right. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right. Moving on to item 5.1, adoption of our March 20th agenda. We have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Ed Pleasant moved to adopt the agenda, and Mrs. Powers, second. We have a roll call, please.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. All right. Item 6. Mrs. Mankin's favorite part of the agenda.
That's right. We have a lot of makeup.
We do.
From yes. Calamity Days for Employee of the Month. So we will start, if that's all right, we'll start with Beth McKay. Beth, you want to come on up? Hi, Beth. I'm going to stand up here and hear all the things that people said about you, so it kind of matters about it. It's okay. Obviously, you were picked by your peers, and they had a lot of great things to say about your work at Edgewood, so I'm going to highlight some of those, because really, you have quite a lengthy list, so I need to go through, which is good, right?
Is it good?
It is good. It's all good. Beth is known throughout Edgewood community as the person who makes the Edgewood drop-off and pick-up system work so well. She takes the safety of our students seriously, and parents know this and respect it. Beth is also quick to follow up with their teammates within the building and throughout the district. Teachers come to Beth on a regular basis to ask questions, and if she does not have the answer, she finds out and gets back with them quickly. She's a dedicated employee of the district. She comes early and does not hesitate to stay late if needed. In my first year at Edgewood Elementary as principal, this is obviously from someone else, I cannot say enough about how much Beth McKay has helped me. She is amazing. Her insights and prior knowledge about the building, students, parents, and community is invaluable. Congratulations. I did not see Barbara Patterson. Did Barbara step in? She's not here. She deserves to be honored as well. So a brief highlights about Barbara. She is currently a special education aide at Creekview. She deserves recognition as Employee of the Month because she is dedicated, puts students first, is hardworking, is self-motivated, has valuable personal experience, goes above and beyond expected responsibilities, is proactive, encourages others, is compassionate, and is honest. So congratulations to her. We'll make sure she gets her little gift. And our January, which seems like forever ago, step on up. Yvonne works with the SAC program, and I'll read your comments as well. Yvonne is really fantastic at her job. Today alone, I've received 2 emails from parents telling me how great she is. Of course, that was probably like December, right? So we're a little behind. She's efficient, patient, helpful, knowledgeable, and has a great rapport with parents, staff, and students. She goes above and beyond the call of duty. She always makes herself available when needed with a kind and generous heart. She is amazing. Her attention to detail, her knowledge of everything is unsurpassable. She is always willing to help out and offer support whenever needed. She works tirelessly to help keep the program running smoothly, and that's not an easy thing to do. So congratulations. Fun to do those little tidbits. So thank you all for everything you do. Well deserved.
Definitely. All right. Now we'll move on to item 7.1, a presentation from Meyer. And so I believe we have a Mr. Gary Hansen here.
Yes.
All right.
I guess there's another Greg Hansen that used to be around here.
So. So we had the opportunity, maybe we come up this way, this awkward spot. We had the opportunity to meet with Meyer. They're moving into the community, as you know. And I guess Andy and I must have met with them probably a couple times in November. And had the opportunity to share with them some of the work we're doing with the early college building. And maybe, do you want to hand it over from there?
Well, you know, as part of Meyer's core ethics is to get involved with the community when we come in. So we looked for a couple months for a good program to get involved with, and we thought that this was the best program to get involved with. So Meyer would like, or already did, donate $25,000 to
STEM school.
So anyway, we're glad to be here in the community, and you know, we'd like to do more when we get here. Sometime, hopefully, it'll be August. Right now, so if everything goes well, we'll be up and in business on August 3rd. So.
Well, thank you very much for your donation. Kathy is the principal for the early college building as well.
We met in the hall, so this is good.
So anyway, so,
this is exciting.
I didn't sign this. Actually, this is from Meyer, not me. So.
You can leave. You can all resign. Fun, it's your first picture pop, right?
Who wants you to miss it?
That's coming up. Thank you. We certainly appreciate your generosity
very much.
We can hand that in.
Yes, I will take it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks, Greg.
So far, so good. All right. Item 7.2, presentation of awards to our master teachers.
So, Mr. Koch. Yes. Spots are going to take the lead.
So I want to take first a moment to recognize the committee that has really taken this on and taken this to heart and done an exceptional job working above and beyond. So if the committee members that are present would please stand up, and I'm going to name those members as well as some of the ones that aren't present. So please stand up if you're on the Master Teacher Committee. There we go. Carrie Romine, Carrie Schwinfirth, Andrew Shire, Carmen Riddle, Laura Koch, Susie Claridge, Janet Porter, Don Burns, Dr. Susan Kukas, Sherry Anderson, Melissa Hackett are members of the Master Teacher Committee, and they do an exceptional job of reading the applications. They take it extremely serious, and the feedback that they provide these individuals is exceptional. So I wanted to take a moment first to begin by just recognizing them. Second, I want to just define what a master teacher is. A master teacher demonstrates excellence inside and outside the classroom through consistent leadership and focused collaboration to maximize student learning. A master teacher strives for distinguished teaching, continued professional growth, as specified by the Ohio Standards of Teaching of the Teaching Profession. And there are seven categories listed, and I just want to take a moment and read them, if you would indulge me. Number one, teachers understand student learning and development and respect the diversity of the students they teach. Number two, teachers know and understand the content area for which they have instructional responsibility. Number three, teachers understand and use varied assessments to inform instruction, evaluate, and ensure student learning. Number four, teachers plan and deliver effective instruction that advances the learning of each individual student. Number five, Teachers create learning environments that promote high levels of learning and achievement for all students. Teachers collaborate and communicate with students, parents, other educators, administrators, and the community to support student learning. And number seven, the final one, teachers assume responsibility for professional growth, performance, and involvement as an individual and as a member of the learning community. So what we're going to do next is recognize this year's recipients. We have a platform, and Ms. Klaus Janino is going to. And what I'd like for you to do is please come up as we call your name and stay up here.
Why the members of the board come up and shake their hands as well.
So why don't I have them?
So Michelle Croft.
Congratulations to
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Pregnant and
master. You are. Someday you want
to come in. Thank you.
Hi, I love all of you too.
Love you.
Standing in front of the board members so we can take a picture, please, with your flags.
Alright, you're good. Here we go.
So people in front.
We're out. Sorry, I forgot about that. Yeah, people are down there. We have to sit together to get in the picture because she's going to be back. Can I get the turn?
Okay. Ready?
Is that our second group that we've...
This is, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that's... Yeah, we really appreciate all the extra time and effort that everyone puts into getting this nice honor. So let's see. And now as we move on to the item 7.3, as usual, I was remiss in not starting the meeting by thanking Bunsold for hosting our meeting this month. So we appreciate... great hospitality and having some coffee for us and just having the place set up, so we really appreciate that. And so now I will introduce Bunsold Middle School to give us their presentation on Common Core in their building.
Thanks. So our Common Core journey started actually not this past fall, but a year ago this past fall. And it has been a process, a huge process. One in which that sometimes we stumbled all through this process during the way, trying to figure out where we were going and what we needed to do. So a year ago this past fall, we got together and we made our focus getting inside of the Common Core standards. What did they look like? What did that mean? We started doing some curriculum mapping. And that in itself was a journey because it was so different than what we were used to. But along that is meshed lesson design and assessment, and all of those things come together. And I would say that there's been some struggles along the way, some professional disagreements about what should be. And I think probably for our teachers, the hardest thing has been is to maybe let go of some things that they've always done because they like that, but it's not somewhere filtered into the core, if that makes sense. So that's a little bit about where we've been, but as part of where we've been, we've also had to find a way to assess that. And the assessment piece, we charged our staff to, by department, create common assessments, either common quarterly assessments and or common unit assessments, so that we could know where our kids are at on that journey as they process through the Common Core. This year has been a really interesting challenge because on top of that, we've also started to identify students that fall into different tiers in terms of what kind of additional supports they need with regard to intervention, pre-teaching, re-teaching, those kinds of things. And we've done that really without any kind of idea or tools. Elementary teachers are probably more accustomed to that because they have an awful lot of diagnostic tools that are embedded in that process. At the middle school and the high school, it's hard to find those diagnostic tools. So we started collecting data. We started to identify kids. And then we recognized that we can collect the data, but if we don't respond to any kind of intervention strategies, then we're collecting data and we're not going to get any different results. I mean, the same results. Mm-hmm. And it's been a struggle for us because we had to help teachers understand that even though we were doing diagnostic testing to determine skill sets of kids, the diagnostic testing may not have been measuring what they were doing in their classes. That's where the common assessments come into play. So there's really two separate avenues that we need to look at. So we have learned a ton. One, we started diagnostic screening with kids and we weren't sure what assessment we were going to use. We've definitely found out that there are better tools out there. And so I think where I want to focus maybe more is not where we've been and what we've done, but more what we've learned and how that's going to look differently moving into next year with regard to the kinds of things I'm talking about. Not only have we collected the diagnostic assessment results, but we didn't have a place to house them. So we had multiple data points coming in from all different spreadsheets, and we were trying to house them into a location so that when we went in and looked at the data, it made sense, and that analysis part, so that we could determine instructional strategies or intervention strategies that we needed to put in place. So it's been a journey, but I think, and some of the teachers that are here, they've not seen this yet. So this has been, so looking forward to next year, there are some things that I think that we've got a better idea of the direction we want to go in regards to those things. So our teachers have been challenged with this year, by the end of this year, to have all of their common assessments complete, at least to have some place to start, realizing that those common assessments are probably going to change, and they may change throughout the course of next year as they continue to take deep dives into the Common Core and figure out exactly what is it that we want kids to know. So one of the leading researchers that is in education right now is Rick DeFore, and he talks about four things. And I think if we keep these four things in mind, it will help us focus where we need to go. What is it we want students to know? How do we know if they know it? What are we going to do if they don't know it? And then what are we going to do with those students that already do master it? And how are we going to take them farther, if that makes sense? So that's kind of, for me, what's been in the back of my mind. And I probably think that our teachers are probably getting tired of hearing it because that's kind of what I say to them all the time. What do we want them to know? Where is our purpose? Where is our focus? And then how are we going to measure that? And it's the measurement tools that's really been a struggle for us this year. But we're getting better. We're getting better. So with that being said, that's a little bit about the journey that we've taken. Let's talk about what we've learned and where we're going to go next year as a result of that. So not by me, not has nothing to do with me, but our curriculum coaches in the district that are working right now at Buntsville have been absolutely spectacular in terms of designing this, helping us gather the data, helping us to house the data in a central location, and doing some of that analysis. But I think it needs to go deeper than that, which is one of the things I'm going to talk about in just a few minutes. So I know this looks overwhelming, but these are kinds of the things that we're thinking about next year in terms of being able to respond to students and close that achievement gap. And I think that's where we want to go with our struggling learners in particular. And then, like I said, answering that fourth question, what are we going to do with those kids that have already mastered that skill, and how are we going to take them to that next step? So that being said, next one. So we decided that we need to develop a student support team. And we started that process this year, but I don't know that we had all the players involved in that. This year, it was the two curriculum coaches, the building principals, guidance counselors were involved in that process as well. We also feel that we probably need to add maybe a school psychologist to be a part of that in terms of that data analysis. The intervention or the special education director needs to be a part of that as well. So going forward into next year, we're planning to develop the student support team to help with the analysis of where our kids are at using the following data that's out here to the right. So in order to be able to put students into these tiers that you saw up there a minute ago, and I'll go through them a little bit more specifically, we have to find a way and have multiple data points on kids so that we can determine where those students might fall so that we can decide what kinds of interventions and additional supports that they're going to need throughout the course of the year. Okay? So we're going to look at probability of proficiency on the OAA. We're going to look at a previous OAA scores, a universal screener that's a standards-based screener, and we're starting to work on that right now. So the curriculum coaches, I've charged them to go out and just set and meet with their respective departments and to craft a standards-based screener that we can use at the beginning of next year that all students are going to take in the standards related to either the 7th gradient or the 8th grade in that content area. Does that make sense? And then all of these data points are going to be used then to determine how these kids are going to filter into tiers. So what we hope happens is that as we look through these tiers, about 85% of our student population will fall into the Tier 1 or the Tier 1 Plus groups for the types of supports they need. 10% into Tier 2 and 5% then into Tier 3. So again, we go back to the big picture and take a look about what is the difference in each of those tiers. So Tier 1 is, these are the 85% of the students that we were talking about that they're going to receive their additional supports by good, sound, rock star, you see it, I didn't put that in there, somebody else, rock star teaching, okay? And it's going to be in an inclusive classroom, and those supports are going to happen during that time, and then it's going to be delivered by, as it says, your regular education teacher, your inclusion teachers would be your intervention specialists that are in the classroom at the same time with the regular education teacher providing those additional supports, and then also to your instructional coaches. Paralleling that with the Tier 1 Plus, which is in the gray, those are students that are still in that 85% in terms of how they, what kind of supports they need, but they need just a little bit more additional support. So we're looking at about 15 to 25 students that we have a class period here that's called a flex period, but what we want to do next year differently than we've done in the past with flex is to strategically schedule these groups of kids into those flex periods for pre-teaching and reteaching to help, again, provide some additional supports. And then if you look at the data that's being used for that, we're just going to use the standard classroom assessments. We're going to look at their attendance data because sometimes that in itself can say, you know, we have to have them here if we can impact what's going on. And then any other additional data that's collected just by regular education classroom teachers. We plan on meeting then with each of those teachers quarterly to continue to reevaluate where these students are during that time in that process, allowing the flexibility to, if kids are doing well in Tier 1, then they're going to stay in Tier 1. But if kids in Tier 1 are struggling and we're not meeting their needs, then they have the flexibility to go into the Tier 1 Plus, so they may then have to be scheduled into those intervention flex classes that we talked about for the pre-teaching and the reteaching. So we're looking at a little bit of flexibility in terms of how those kids move back and forth. And the same thing happens with your Tier 1 Plus kids. If we do this right, in theory, Like, you have students that are not getting their adequate supports in that Tier 1 Plus to help close that achievement gap, then they may float into some additional supports in Tier 2 and Tier 3. Does that make sense, how we're, what we're looking at doing? So the biggest thing is we had to figure out a way to increase time in instruction to provide the additional supports for kids that were struggling learners that weren't able to gather what they needed to out of a regular education classroom setting during the course of lessons. Does that make sense? Okay. Now I'm going to turn the rest of it over to Mike.
So one of the things about a response intervention model is that it has to be fluid and has to be able to adapt to what the students are telling you. So she's saying if they're succeeding, we don't want to put them in a reteaching class for a whole year. We want to be able to move them in quarter two if quarter one's not working. And if they get it by quarter three, we want to move them back out and start enrichment. That's what Flex allows us to do. It allows us to continually monitor students and then move them into that pre-teaching, reteaching, or back into enrichment-style classes taught by other teachers. But if our kids still aren't performing the way we want them to, we have additional levels of support. So if Tier 1 Plus is remediation at grade level, Tier 2 is remediation on more fundamental skills, so numeracy, literacy issues, that sort of thing. We will schedule kids into those types of classes during Flex, taught by either regular ed teachers or inclusion teachers, or intervention specialists, to really hone in on the fundamental gaps in skill that they need to be able to function in the regular education classes. And RTI is all about time. So we have to be able to actually add more time to their schedule in the areas of need. So we have the potential here to double mathematic education, remedial math, remedial language arts, or at grade level remediation in language arts if that's what the student's need requires. And if we need to go further, we can move students into Tier 3 where we start to look at places to pull them out of other classes in their schedule to give an additional layer of remedial time if those remedial classes aren't meeting their needs. And so, actually, that's pretty much the long and short of it. It's actually the only other piece of Tier 2 and Tier 3 is that you're no longer using the common assessment, that grade level measure, to see where kids are, because that's not telling you enough of where the gap in skill is. So kids in these two tiers are going to be monitored on a much more granular level. We're going to be looking at much more fundamental skill gaps to try to identify where what's the barrier to them succeeding in a class. So the way you progress monitor kids in these classes is a lot different, so you can get the information you need to do that really deep, below grade level remediation to allow them to succeed. So again, it's about not only knowing what your kids need, but providing a framework within your master schedule to respond to it. And that's what we're hoping we're able to achieve with some tweaks to the master schedule, buy-in from teachers at the building, and the lessons that we've learned this year. So that's kind of the whole mess, as it were. There you go. Do you have any questions?
Yes. When, with all the instructions going on this year, when did you have time?
Well, that's what I started. Remember what I said? Our curriculum coaches have been absolutely spectacular at Bunsold. And that came with a lot of trust on our part. I had a kind of an idea of what we needed. Knew that the kinds of things that we were doing this year wasn't meeting, and we weren't getting the results we wanted. And so it was a charge, and it was saying to them, saying, here's where we need to go with this. We're not being effective right now. Let's figure out a way to fix this. And I'm sure that although this looks spectacular, I'm sure that, like this year, we'll run into some speed bumps along the way that we're going to have to figure out what that looks like. But it was us telling them, this is where we want to go, and then the lessons we've learned. Like, if you remember, I talked about we didn't have a place to house all the data that was being pulled from all of these different places. And that in itself, just to take all those pieces of the data and to dump them into a central location, took the curriculum coaches a long time. So it was us crafting and guiding where we wanted them to go. And really, they did a bulk of the work. And this is what we've learned from it. And we've sat down and met several times.
And feedback from our staff, I know Angie's gone round and round about the quality of the progress monitoring we've been doing. Carrie's been executing, and Juliet have been doing that progress monitoring. And so we've gotten a lot of real-time feedback as to where the gaps in our need are. So a lot of lessons learned as to the quality of the assessment we need to put in place, and So, I mean, it's been a constant dialogue around Bunsold, so it's been very instructive.
And progress monitoring, at least for me, is a new thing at the middle school and high school level. I remember when I was in a past district at an elementary level, you talk progress monitoring, and they're like, oh, yeah, we do that all the time. And so it's a different world for us, and up until this year, we've not been charged to do anything like that. And we've learned so much, and I think our teachers have learned a lot in that process as well. I would say that probably going forward, the most important thing for us right now is helping our teachers understand that by doing this, the benefit that it's gonna make for kids along the way through this process. Because this year, the types of data that we were collecting, and because we weren't responding the way we needed to from the results of the data, I'm not sure that we got the outcomes we were looking for. That's probably what started this whole conversation. You can't continue to do the same things and expect different results. And I think that's been part of, but we had to start somewhere. And so we dipped our toe in and we started. And I don't think that's a bad thing that we made the mistakes along the way, because we wouldn't be where we're at right now if we hadn't made those mistakes along the way. Mm-hmm. So, I've made lots of mistakes.
Well, I'm very impressed, and I also wanted to comment that you guys did have to deal with the transition mid-year as well. So Michelle Stillings-Kaffenbauer was previously the assistant principal, moved up to the principal, and Mike Robertson came from the high school to be assistant principal. So it's pretty obvious you jumped in running. So,
Well, we'll see, I guess. It feels more like stumbling, but I'm sure if we're giving the impression of running, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I keep saying to Mike, do you know how much work we have to do? Do you know how much work we have to do? He's like, yeah, we'll be all right.
The awesome thing, though, is I think everybody at Bunsold feels that way. Yeah. And you sit in department meetings, you sit in department chair meetings, and there's just an energy for getting it right. Yeah. And, being able to adapt your master schedule in this way, being able to create these opportunities, there's nothing more demoralizing than feeling like you're trying your best to differentiate a class, and you know you're going to see 3 to 5 kids not be able to reach it, and not knowing what to do when kids don't learn. It's not that you can't provide those supports, but there's just not time in the schedule. So it's really about time, and Diane put that charge on the principals to figure out ways to increase time in the areas we need, and I think that's going to provide a lot of relief to teachers who sometimes get very frustrated feeling they can't do enough for kids within the 50 minutes they have to try to affect change. So we're very excited.
Well, I was just thinking that, it's obvious you couldn't do something like this without the entire staff being a part of it. And, it's a great collaborative effort with everybody. And so we'll be excited to hear what kind of results you get.
Thank you. I would just add, I appreciate your reflective growth mindsets. I think that's what you've been talking about, looking at possibilities instead of obstacles or speed bumps or what have you, but to look at possibilities, and certainly right-minded thinking, doubling time on task, research supports all of those things, and just for your leadership and driving and working with teachers around being willing to upset the apple cart with your schedule, because that's not ever easy work either. So, great job.
Thank you. All right. Ready to move on to item 8.1, Mrs. Mankin, Superintendent's Report.
Sure. I think we'll Craig, do you want to start tonight? Craig's here from Rusilli, who will give us a construction update on the early college building.
First of all, I can't tell you, I'm quite sure that Kathy was all excited to get that check that she's already had it spent. I imagine she has lots of uses for it. This time I don't have anything to present yet. We're very close. As I said, when I come in here, as we're going through the construction project, because you don't get a chance to get out the building, I'll bring some photos, something very brief, just to give you some quick glimpses. But so all I have is just a basic update of where we are. Good news, we're out. We've got bids for our first, what we have call our bid release one. And that is the complete demolition scope of work as well as roofing. We want to make sure you keep your building dry, and we certainly need to get everything out of there. So those are the first two things that we have to get going with. So we're actually coming tomorrow to meet with both Mike and Diane to share our recommendations and show what our bids came in at. We are under budget, which is good, which is where we want to stay as we continue. And Diane's very happy about that, I can tell.
That's right.
Poly positive. Poly positive. That's so. And we just received drawings today for the next big of bid release, and that is for mechanical, plumbing, HVAC. There's quite a bit of work there, electrical, as well as some walls, construction, and some doors and windows, and all this stuff is going to start putting it back together. So that's a big one. That's one we have to get out there and get after. The project at this point, you know, our schedule's gotten a little bit compressed from where we were supposed to be, and so, but Rosilia is committed to making this happen on time, as Diane's made it very clear it needs to be. And we'll be working for sure 6 10-hour shifts, possibly 7 days and or second shift. So we're going to be busy out there pretty much nonstop. It's going to take that level of effort and commitment to get done on time by the middle of August, and I feel comfortable that, that we'll achieve that. So next time I'll have more to share with you, more to show you, and to wow you with, and my presentation will always be better than Kathy's.
Thank you. We had the opportunity, Kathy and I, this week to meet with the architect and start going through basic materials. So we looked at different tiles. We did not pick out colors, kind of like we were getting a house, but picking out different materials and what would work in different spaces and trying to really accent some of those open learning spaces and so we had a lot of fun doing that, and so it feels like it's kind of coming together from our part.
Strangely enough, I volunteered to pick all the colors of the entire project, and no one took me up on it. No one did, but yeah, so.
You and Mike.
Exactly. White. So next time I come here, I'll be able to share a little more with you, show you some exciting efforts that we're putting forth, and it's going to take a lot of work on everyone's part, but we're going to get knocking out of the park, so to speak, and we're looking forward to being done of August.
All right. Thank you.
Board have any
Thank
questions?
You.
Okay. Well, I'm done.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
See you tonight.
Okay.
All right. Kathy?
So I've been busy on putting the things that are going to go in the school that Craig's putting together. So a couple things have happened this month. We applied for STEM designation with the state. That was due last week. It doesn't seem to be a clear answer on when we're going to know, but everything was sent to ODE, and we have all of our letters of commitment, and I think we're good there. We also applied for, with the Ohio STEM Learning Network, a $7,500 professional development grant, and he called me tonight with a little bit more information about how he wanted to spend the money. So I feel like that money's ours. He didn't quite guarantee it. I was already suspended again, so I was pretty excited about that, but that's going to happen. And then also with the Ohio STEM Learning Network, both Jason Worth and I have applied to go to their STEM Leaders Academy this summer, and I think we hear about that by the end of the month. Staffing has moved along. We now have an intervention specialist identified. I haven't let everybody know yet, so I need to do that. But we've got a secretary, a library aide, and our information technology teacher will be Tom Powers, and he's going to come over for a couple periods, and I'm absolutely thrilled about that, that's exciting. Debbie Wortman and myself and Scott McLemore and I think Jeff Spain are interviewing tomorrow for
So those are people from Honda and
Honda
State.
Our
partners from
And they will be interviewing with us for the machinery type manufacturing person. And we have some really good candidates that we're looking at. That person will be shared with the mobile fab lab. Right about that.
Right.
So we should have that piece in place too. So as far as a faculty, we really now we would have somebody to answer the phone, so that's pretty exciting for me too. Curriculum is the big focus for us going forward now. We've worked closely with Columbus State on the career tech side, but we now also have to focus some of our attention on the arts and sciences side about how do kids get those college credits their junior and senior years, and what does that look like. So I met with Columbus State this week to talk a little bit about a plan with that, and we're going to start having, we already have the career tech side curriculum meetings, but we're going to add like a weekly component of the arts and science side so that we can get those pathways clearly laid out for kids. As far as students, we are right at 144 students right now, and I think that's pretty solid. We'd added a couple come and a couple go, but I think we're right where we want to be with that. And our next step with students is right after spring break, my new staff is going to come, and we're going to interview each kid to make sure they have a clear understanding of what their schedule is going to look like, try to talk to them a little bit about their aspirations or their concerns, and get to know them a little bit as learners, and then have a meeting for their parents, because I'm pretty sure my knowledge of eighth graders is they might not get everything quite correct, and it would be nice for parents to get to hear that same thing that evening about where we're going. And then we've come up with dates. It would be June 25th and 26th for our Summer Bridge program, where I'm not sure where it will be, but because it won't be at the new facility then, but I would give Craig a heart attack if I said we need to have a couple days in June. But where kids are going to do a design challenge and be put into advisory groups and get to sort of think about how learning will be at the new school. So that's sort of a quick summary of what we've done this month. Do you have questions for me?
We also applied for a Board of Regents grant with
Columbus
State, which would generate $2,000 per student if we were awarded that, that's enrolled in the early college building. It's an early college-specific grant through Columbus State.
What would it be used for?
It can go to instruction supplies.
Okay, good. So, I guess, let's say a student came to that June 25th, 26th Summer Bridge program and said,
I don't like this.
Yeah. Do they still have time?
Our big thing was to get the kids that wanted to be there.
Right.
Now, if they come to me in October, though, like this, then I'm going to say, oh, honey, you want to gut it out until May, no matter what. That's our commitment that we've been pretty clear with. But yeah, if somebody in June said, really, I didn't like one piece of this, I would absolutely work to make sure they could get a schedule built at the high school.
Thank you.
Thank you. Certainly, Kathy's leadership, she's doing a fantastic job, and we seem to be frequently in Columbus quite often and driving back and forth and trying to work out all the pieces, so to try to get all those entities to come together is interesting, but I will tell you, they don't miss many meetings now that we have a regular schedule. We have Honda and Columbus State at the table and different partners, so it's pretty exciting work.
Todd and I did have that review this week, too.
Oh, that's right. Straight A Fund came in this week and did their first review, audit, if you will, and I think we're in pretty good shape. They didn't give us a lot of specific feedback, but more asking questions. It's their first time through as well, so it's kind of like we're learning together, but they did give us some things that we need to refine, so we're going back and doing those now, but, you know, official wouldn't be till later, but just this was kind of a midway checkpoint for them as well.
Good.
Anything you guys would add?
I would just add that I believe they were pleased at what they'd found based on some of the other conversations they'd had with some other districts. So I think they were very pleased with what we were doing and how far we progressed in our record keeping and those kinds of things.
Okay. We'll just highlight a few other things. OGT testing was at the high school last week, so that has wrapped up, and we have OAA testing on the horizon in May. I am also going to forward to you what is projected to be next year's assessment calendar from ODE that Andy put together this week. Just to give you a sampling of the increased assessment load that will be taking place next year with PARC and different online pieces and adding in fifth grade pieces and eighth grade pieces. So I'll forward that to you to kind of give you an idea of what we're looking at for next year, because it is a significant change for our students and staff. Additionally, strategic planning took place. We had our, what I would probably think, our final community meeting to revise. It's certainly been a process to get here, but we have a pretty good document that we plan to bring to you in April for review. Certainly, you'll see it before the meeting, and then we'll talk about it most likely at the meeting or at a work session before. We have worked with a community group throughout the school year. This is we've worked through admin council. We've had principals and directors take it back to different groups and work through their building leadership, and teachers give feedback. So we have had pretty comprehensive input from different groups of people, parents and et cetera. So excited to get that underway. And then as we talked, we'll work on our board goals to align with that. And it's nice when all those arrows start moving in the same direction. Calamity Day update. I'm happy to let you know that we are good to go. That's all we need to say. Right? It's certainly been a journey this year. We have two Calamity Days that we could take advantage of, and our Blizzard Bag Day is still pending. And as I learned last year in Marysville, fog in the spring is inevitable, so that will allow us some flexibility with that as well. As celebrations, certainly want to highlight, we had a fantastic basketball season. They went further than they have in quite some time, as well as our show choir. Had five in a row first place finishes, which is a record for show choir. And our wrestling team came in second, or third in the state, I apologize. And next month we'll be honoring those state placers. I guess that's how you'd say, placers, in wrestling and gymnastics. So certainly it was a fantastic winter sports season. I'm looking forward to spring season, maybe, kicking off. I think today's first day of spring, right? So
that's right.
Staffing, so later in the agenda, obviously in my part, we go through teachers who were retiring, and we had some conversation about really taking a serious look at every single opening that pops up in the district, whether that's a retirement or a resignation, and having the difficult conversation about filling that position, filling it differently. As you know, I committed to you, I committed to the community and staff to make sure that we did not ever experience something like we did last year, and that is part of that plan. So we've had some difficult conversations around that with building leadership. So we'll continue to move through that process as the spring comes. As we know, that can be a very dynamic time for staffing, so we'll continue to do that. We're working really hard to look at enrollment as a function for replacing positions, and not just replacing positions because we've always had them. For example, Bunzold will be about 80 to 100 less students next year, because we have a very small sixth grade class coming into seventh grade. So as positions become available in Bunzold, we'll be paying careful attention to what our enrollment numbers are and class size and things of that before we make decisions to replace or not. So that will be happening in the spring. I think those are the big things I have.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Sure.
Any questions or comments? Okay. Then, Mr. Johnson, Treasurer's Report.
Yes. Okay, I wanted to point out, you'll notice on Treasurer's Action Items an appropriations increase in the Straight A Fund. Diane had already mentioned that we were awarded additional Straight A grant, but I don't think it can be mentioned enough. The impact of these grants that Diane's been actively getting for us. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that was worth pointing out again. We should know the final allocations sometime this week or next. So expect at our April board meeting an additional and much larger appropriations increase in that Straight A fund. Also wanted to point out that we've created a Star Plus account for the district. That's an investment account. It while it's not getting the great interest rates that we may have gotten 10 years ago, with the market as it is, we're getting a better interest rate than we were with some of our other investment vehicles. The good thing about the Star Plus account is that it's a state treasurer program, so we've got weekly liquidity as well as FDIC protection, so the community's money is not at risk in this program. And it should, depending, you know, rates could vary. It's been steady for the last year or so, and depending upon the amount of money that we leave in that account. But based on the current amount, it could lead to an additional approximately $10,000 in interest revenue for in a year's time.
Great.
Also wanted to point out the audit, the fiscal year 13 financial audit has officially been released. That was an unqualified audit, which means that's a clean audit, no major problems. And finally, I want to introduce Jeff Gordon. He is from K-12 Business Consulting. Mr. Gordon has created a permanent improvement forecasting model. You know, a lot of times we focus so much on the operations of the district and with, you know, looking at the five-year forecast. But we, you know, when we're looking at the long-term health of the district, we also need to look at the permanent improvement side as well. Mr. Gordon's model is going to be an important piece as we make that planning going forward. So I'll turn it over to Jeff.
Thank you for allowing me to come here tonight. I have just some samples of what you will see when the project's done. Again, thank you, and I also want to thank you for allowing Kate to expand our partnerships with you and to this. I commend you for being willing to take a look at this. So many districts look at a 5-year forecast and they don't look past that. As a living in a neighboring district, I've been here many times and your buildings were beautiful, well-maintained. I enjoy coming here. But what happens a lot of times, districts don't look ahead. They don't look at that 10 years and 20 years down the road and what it's going to cost. So when you build buildings and add chillers and you add boilers and you add all that future maintenance early on, there's not a whole lot of cost to it. But as you go down the road, you find that those costs really start adding up and they multiply quickly. So being willing to look down that road and prepare for that to happen and put funding in place to maintain is really important to do that. A little bit about myself. I have been in school business for over 15 years, a short time at a small college. School districts from 1,600 students to 18,000 students. So kind of had the whole realm of having my hands on with the day-to-day maintenance and some repairs and being involved with those decisions to do a little larger, bigger view on that. So I don't know everything about school operations, but I like to say I know which questions to ask. I've known Mr. White, I've stepped out for several years, and I know that after meeting with them and the rest of your administration, that they have a good handle for what the district needs, what you need next year, what you need the year after, what things are starting to age with the immediate. But looking again past that 5 years, there's a need for that, and it's part of what Mr. Johnson is looking at for the funding and making sure that's in place. To give you an idea of what the process will look like, is I have already sent Mr. White surveys, building surveys to gather information. So we'll continue to gather data in all areas. We'll look at your asphalt, how many square yards of asphalt you have, what your specs are for the asphalt that you put in. We'll expand that to roofs. What kind of roofs do you have? Rubber roofs, metal roofs. We'll get the square footage of that. We'll look at the years that you put in. We'll look at the warranties, how long that, you know, those warranties last, when you can expect to have repairs on those. You know, with roofs, here you're looking at 20 years out. You're looking at 15 years out, depending on the type of roofing. And those are just really good examples of that in asphalt of where your big costs are going to come in, along with your HVAC equipment. Then there's a lot of other things that people don't give a lot of thought to, and that's the school furniture, the things that the chairs you're sitting on, the tables, that after 15 years and 20 years start to go, and it's just something that gets missed a lot with the principals when they're filling out their budget. They're always teachers, hey, we need this technology, or we need this, and it's always focuses on the learning as it should be, as we saw the presentation earlier, but a lot of times these things get missed. So those are, again, another area that we'll look at is the school furniture. You'll see in the handout all the different areas that we're going to cover. So once we gather all of that data, and we'll look at it, and then we'll have conversations with administration, and I'm sure they'll bring those back to the board as well, and look at things like your asphalt. life cycle do you want with your asphalt? And we have examples. What does it look like at 10 years? What's it look like at 12 years? And kind of set that limit, because that's going to make a big difference in the cost of it, is what you use there. Maybe it's 8 years, depending on the bus lanes, maybe sooner, your parking lots can go a little longer. But then we have some examples of what you get at 10 years and what you get at 15 years and kind of where you fall into that and what you're willing to accept as a district when you're planning for that funding. In addition to that, so we'll gather all the data, and then it's not just Jeff looks at it and says, hey, this is what the life cycle is, or this is what I think it'll cost to replace this. And I go through and I find metrics and comparables. So I use state term pricing. We look at HVAC equipment, custodial equipment. I'll match that up with state term pricing, what it is today. Then we'll look at life cycle going out, and at the end of the project, then we'll put a inflation factor onto it. So we'll give you some idea, okay, here's today's cost, but we won't be replacing that roof for 15 years. What's going to cost in 15 years? And we can, we can use average inflation rates in the Midwest for Ohio and speculate what that would be. Obviously, economy has a lot to do with that, where things fall, but we can only use the information we have now. Other things that we use is RS Means is another guide used by engineers and architects for costing out construction projects. So they use those a lot of times when they're forecasting and go off the bid, like the gentleman was here earlier, the construction is, they will give you estimates what they think the bid should be. Well, that's one of the pieces of data they use to put that together. The Ohio school facilities, while they do a lot of school renovations, they also go in and they do assessments. As part of those assessments, they'll go into a school building and they'll look at it and say, it's going to cost this much to renovate it or this much, but we need to tear it down, it's going to be too much, and rebuild. Well, as part of that assessment, they put together assessment guidelines, and they also put together costs. So that's another good source of looking at what your costs will be going forward is how school facilities. For example, they tell you with the rubber roof, think about $12.84 a square foot. So they've already done this so many times that they've been able to compile that data, and then they update that yearly. So again, there's multiple sources we'll go to try to cross-match that and get you the best estimates possible. Sometimes if there's something in your district that's a little unusual, you may look at what you have purchased that for if you've done it recently, or go to some of your vendors that you currently use and say, this is kind of an odd thing, it's not easy to find a price. Can you give us some information on that? So once we have that together, again, we'll put that into a report. I will come back, and I'll actually have a PowerPoint next time for you with more information. We'll go through, kind of look through a summary, and we can get as in-depth as you'd like to get. I will submit those, obviously, to the administration beforehand, give you a chance to see them and have questions for that. But I think you'll find interesting in looking at those costs that they skyrocket pretty quickly. When you look at today's cost, and then you go 10 years out with inflation, and you add another, that builds and compounds each year. So it can be scary when you look at it, but if you plan for it and you know ahead of time, then it's much less scary. Mm-hmm. I know I went kind of fast. Any questions for me? Be happy to answer them or cover anything that I flew by.
Probably just misses. How long does it take you to, are you going to physically go through all the buildings? And what's your timeline?
Our goal is to be done by June 15th. I will visit every building. I will walk through every building. I won't necessarily inventory every chair or any of the building. I will rely on the administration to supply that. I know that Mr. White has the questionnaires, and I'm sure has data. He may have reporting that square footage already. If that's something you don't have, there's a couple different methods you can use. There's actually several apps you can use now. There's Google Earth and buildings you can map out and measure and get those measurements. If that's something you don't have, you can get that. Same thing with your roofs. And those are all pretty accurate. So we'll go through that process and do it. It will be collaboration between us, using the information you have and looking at, okay, we don't have this, but how do we gather that? And what's the best method for doing it? Usually the district has that information in one form or another. I know one district has given me about 20 pages of HVAC equipment handwritten and inventory. So you can pile that into a spreadsheet and they'll have a nice inventory coming back that they can manipulate and use. But it just depends on the district and what you have. But it's not a short process. It's not something to be done in a couple of weeks. Once the data is gathered, it's a couple of weeks just to really put the pricing to it and go through that and try to match everything up.
Any questions?
Yeah,
thank you.
I'm excited about getting a handle on where we are and where we need to go in terms of our facilities, because I think it's important to be able to speak authoritatively in terms of what the costs of the future.
Well, and that helps when you go out, and school funding is always changing, we all know that. So it helps to have this information. The more you have when you go out for levies, you go out for additional funding or talk about funding, the more information you have, the easier it is to sell that or show people what the needs are, the true needs are.
Thank you very much.
That's all for the Treasurer's Report.
All right. Thank you. Next, we have the Ohio High Point Report, Mr. Decco's first official report. Sure.
Thanks for the floor. It is official. I was sworn in last month, February 26th, right. Myself and Mr. Moser, so there's no getting out of this. So it started off with recognizing there were four students that were recognized. Two of them were from the electronics program. Nicholas Davis from West Liberty and Evan Downing from Riverside. These folks were in the electronics program. And then there was Shelby McMahon from the cosmetology program, Indian Lake High School, and then Samantha Metz, animal management student from Bell Fountain High School. So they all were given an award, student of the month. And I thought what was kind of interesting is the students talked about their experience at High Point. They were very complimentary about the quality of the education. They talked a little bit about their future path forward. Many of them were going on to secondary education. One gentleman in particular, I believe it was Nicholas Davis, he scored like a 33, I think it was, on the SAT, and he had a number of offers from different universities. I think he said he had a full scholarship for High Northern. He was going into engineering. So working with Honda, it's always nice to hear that we have students that want to go into the hard sciences, as I call it. That was pretty good. And a couple of the parents actually stood up and spoke about the experience that their students had at High Point. Again, they were very complimentary about the education. And one father in particular said that he had some reservations about his son going to High Point, but felt it was really a terrific decision because he just did so well and he's positioned to be very successful moving forward. So that was kind of neat to hear. Then Dr. Price, who's the superintendent, gave a lot of different updates. He talked about the IT lab was on schedule. He mentioned the satellite lab and the connection with Marysville. He did say that Clark State, the GED administration, is returning back to OHP campus. I don't know a lot of history regarding that, but I guess it's coming back to the campus and they will deliver that GED electronically. One of the things that they're going to do also is undergo a facility study for the animal management program, that they need to, I think, do some expansion, and they would want to understand what's the best direction. Should they expand or build a new brick and mortar? So they're going to do that study this summer, and then the capital improvement should take place, I guess, the next summer. Jeff talked a little bit about the mobile lab. It was a key component, and he felt it was really important that we raise the awareness of that mobile lab in the community. So he was very complimentary about that activity. This is this would have already taken place. I guess Senator Portman was to tour High Point on March 15th, which was last Saturday. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually going to meet with Dr. Price tomorrow, and he's going to give me a board survivor kit. So I'm interested in understanding the results of that visit with Senator Portman. I'll report out on that next month. The treasurer just provided the basic update. I don't think anything of significance there, except he wanted to get approval to actually transfer the title for one of their buses. It just isn't roadworthy, so it's just better just to scrap it, so no problem there. I think they also converted from propane to natural gas recently, right? And commented that saved a lot of money given the harsh winter conditions, so that was a nice windfall for them. Then we went into the executive session, which lasted a long time. Okay, so at 10:15, I'm going, is this like a typical board meeting? But at any rate, those were personnel issues that they had to talk about. There was an instructor retirement. Maybe you know this individual, Heather Reed, business instructor. She submitted a retirement letter, and she's been there 30 years, entire career, so that was kind of neat. And then I provided a written report to the board members. There are some details regarding the Marysville, the different teachers and so forth. Judy Fletcher talked about some of the activity in her purview, and then Ashley Thompson, nursery and landscaping, talked about some of the events those folks were involved in. And then Sally Andrews talked about, I think, the health information students, and they were taking their written test February 28th and so forth. I was assigned to the program committee. Not sure exactly what that is, but we'll meet next Wednesday at 6. Mm-hmm. They did have some brief discussion about the school calendar, and they were going to add, I think, 15 minutes. And then they recognized Reliant Mechanical, donated 2 air compressors. And then they had 4 students who will be visiting Colorado, I think it is. Yeah. So I guess March 19th through 24th. So that'll be really soon. And so they just sought approval for that funding. And I did meet with the treasurer last Friday to talk a little bit about the funding model. So I, you know, got a little bit of education in that area, how it all works. He talked about the history and the different superintendents that have been involved in OHP. So it was a good level setting for myself. Like I noted earlier, I'm going to meet with Dr. Price tomorrow, and he'll provide like a tour of OHP, which will be good for me, and then we'll talk about some other things. So you have the report, I believe. Sue distributed that. If you have any questions, comments, feedback on the format or content, let me know.
Okay. Well, like I said, yeah, I thought it was very, very thorough, and I mean, I like that little section where you're kind of highlighting Marysville students and or teachers. Excellent. And things like that. So, and we appreciate your willingness to go and meet with the treasurer and superintendent. So,
happy to do. Thanks.
Great.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next, we have the legislative report, Mr. Smith.
Legislative report. There are currently about 40 bills in the state legislature that all deal with education. And they are all over the place. Bills obviously have to pass the House and the Senate, and they have to go through committees. And so a number of them have been submitted, maybe in committee. Committees may or may not act on them, so most of the bills are going to be up in limbo. But there were a few that I think are of note. Substitute Senate Bill 229, which deals with teacher evaluation, is a permissive bill in that it would provide school districts more flexibility in terms of their policies for teacher evaluation. Currently, every teacher has to be evaluated every year. And it's a very time-consuming process. And this bill would allow accomplished teachers to be evaluated every 3 years, skilled teachers every 2, other teachers on an annual basis and so forth. So, and this is, the way it's worded, it says it would permit schools to adopt. So it allows for local school boards then to make a decision as to up to those guidelines. And it has passed in the House. It's now headed to the Senate. We'll see. There's substitute House Bill 193 that deals with graduation requirements, this bill is looking to align graduation requirements with new standards and testing and so forth that's done in Ohio. The issue with it could be the timeline, just how quickly things are going to be put in place and whether or not school districts have the time in order to change their process, but there seemed to be general support for the alignment. It was a matter of just at what rate that ought to be put into place. House Bill 240 calls for the elimination of special elections. And that would is a bill that would be of interest to school boards across the state. It would eliminate the possibility of a special election in February and in August, and mean that school levies and school issues would only be able to be addressed in May and in November. So that's something that I think bears watching to see what direction that might go. There are a couple of bills dealing with health for children. Substitute House Bill 264, diabetes care at school. Generally, I think schools do a good job of working with parents of students and finding appropriate level of care. This includes some mandates. The Ohio School Board Association raised some concerns or raises some concerns about some of the additional requirements that it imposes on schools, and hopes that school districts will be continuing to work with parents to make sure the kids get all the care that they need and do it in the most appropriate manner. To do it without some hard and fast guidelines. The other one has to do with the epinephrine auto-injectors. That, I think, it's passed in the House, is headed to the Senate. Again, there seemed to be a lot of support for that. I attended legislative conference down in Columbus, and had an opportunity to talk with both Dorothy Quinn and Senator Burke, and had some good conversations with them, not specifically about this bill, but while I was there, I heard that there's a possibility that one of the companies that produces these may set up a program where they would provide a couple of pens to every school. But that's not necessarily known whether that's actually going to happen or not, but having the ability to address the relatively unusual situation, a very critical situation where you have a kid that has a allergic reaction and be able to do that in an appropriate manner. The big thing is House Bill 497, which is the mid-biennium review. And this is the governor's mid-year adjustment of the budget. And at the conference that I attended, they handed out a couple things, press release from the governor's office on that, and also kind of a summary of things. And the House Majority Leader spoke and said that they were looking at dividing this into 11 to 15 different bills and try to do it kind of piecemeal, one part at a time rather than a large process. But there's a whole long list that we don't have time to get into of things that are going to change, some of which may occur, some of which may not. I would encourage you to stay abreast of what's going on.
What's the timing on that one?
The state legislature is meeting now until mid-late June, and so things have to be done by then. They have to be put into place 60 days before a law that's passed by the state legislature and signed by the governor. Goes into effect 60 days later, so you're looking at the next month or two for most of the decisions to be made in order for them to take effect July 1. Within that, I mean, there are things that affect schools, but there's nothing gigantic.
There's several pieces in there about dropout prevention and recovery and getting adults diplomas, as well as creating alternative pathways for students that are embedded in credentialed pathways. So students who get industry credentials, you could make a separate plan for them to actually waive an Algebra 2 requirement, but maybe use something as Honda Math as the substitute for that if it's an industry credential type piece. So I think those are some different pieces in there as well.
Yeah. One of the comments that I made was I encouraged our representatives to be careful of unfunded mandates. If they're going to do something, it's going to have a significant price tag to it. You need to be aware.
That was lost error that you had.
So thank you for making the comment.
One thing I just noticed when I saw this, it jumped out at me, is that part of that is that they're encouraging mentorship through community connectors. And the governor's proposing that, $10 million to provide a 3-for-1 matching grants to support efforts. So I know, I know that's something that we're really focusing on. So, okay.
Thank you,
Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
All right. Item 9.1, public participation. Do you have anyone sign up? You would like to? Okay. Then let's see. We do have someone. And I think she's going to get, you did sign your, okay, good. She's getting that. Okay.
My name is Bobby Hammond, and I've got two sons. Bobby goes here to Bunsell, he's in eighth grade. Wade will be going to Bunsell next year, in the seventh grade. Both of them are homeschooled. Wade's homeschooled now. Bobby will be, this was his first year, so. Really likes it. He's very excited about going to the STEM school. Just want to give you a little background. I have no idea that this is the appropriate venue to ask you guys this question. He's brought up to me a few times since he was homeschooled. We had a lot of interaction with his curriculum, obviously. And there are a few points, and they're not social or moral, to you guys can agree with them, sadly. But they are factually inaccurate things that are in some books and whatnot. So one of those happened to be, he'll come home and he's like, this was in there and whatnot, we'll go look up and see. His Worldly Wise, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that or not, really, really good book, vocabulary builder. He likes that, I can tell, it makes a big difference on him. Tries to incorporate some of the words and whatnot in him. But what they kind of do is have a story or a little something or other there, and it incorporates the words in it. One he just brought in the other day, and he was, I don't go through reading this stuff, he brings it up to me just so you know. Wolves do kill the live, but they do not kill humans. Every story of a wolf attacking humans has been discredited by those who have studied the subject. Well, we did a short little internet search. There's been people in North America who've been killed and injured just in the last few years about that. It also speaks about how the early settlers believed that the wolf was a ferocious beast who made unprovoked attacks on humans. Phrases such as keeping the wolf from the door and tales like Little Red Riding Hood may have perpetuated was one of the words there for the vocabulary. This misunderstanding. Well, we looked up that and I found this interesting. Between 1580 and 1830 in France alone, there were 3,000 documented cases of wolves killing people. So the settlers that came over, they were. And this is not brought up in here, but the wolves in Yellowstone, that's kind of a big thing. There are people living around there, wolves killing livestock. There's also, in social studies, he brought this up, it's being taught that we're a representative democracy as opposed to a constitutional republic, which we're actually a constitutional republic, that we use a representative democracy to administer that constitutional republic. The teacher had said that those two were interchangeable, and we had a little debate about that. But there are a few things that, when it becomes an actual, when it's something that's factually inaccurate, and I don't know if we have a means to bring those to someone's attention. It's kind of nice here to ask, and if you guys can point me, like I say, if you're not able to do that too, but if there's a way to bring that up where that may be able to be addressed while that's being taught, or to show both sides. Sometimes an issue like global warming, there's differences of opinions on that. And the papers that he brought home, it said scientists this and that, you know, this is happening, scientists say, rather than some scientists, which that kind of makes a big difference, especially in science, where the object, we've always told both of them since we've been homeschooling, we're not trying to tell them what to teach, or what to learn, sorry. We're trying to teach them how to learn, how to think. We don't want to teach them what they're thinking, but how to do that. And I understand comments.
I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt you, but okay. we do have a 3-minute limit on our public.
Okay. 3 minutes?
We are past three minutes. Obviously, I would like you to continue this conversation and share your concerns.
I'll give you a call.
Yeah.
Is your number on that sheet?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
Get a hold of you tomorrow, and we can have
that
conversation. Does that work?
Great.
Thank you very much.
The
thing I want to just real quick.
Okay.
Is that kind of undermines a little bit of trust when those things are in there? Because kids, especially younger kids, have such respect for teachers and people in authority.
Right.
And those type of things, when they notice that, it kind of undermines that a little bit.
Right.
So
I didn't catch what book.
It's Worldly Wise. Okay. It's a vocabulary book that they use in their language journals.
Okay.
It's a really, really good book.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's see. Where are we? Now we are to 10.1, approval of minutes from prior meeting. So we need a motion to approve the minutes from last month.
So moved.
We have a motion by Mr. Smith. I'll second.
Second.
Oh. You can give it to Mr. Pleasant. roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion passes. All right, item 11.1, approving the treasurer CFO action items. Do we have a motion to approve the treasurer items?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Pleasant.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Powers. Do we have any discussion?
You mentioned earlier the changes
in the appropriations,
in funding, and so forth. Could you explain that again, please?
The appropriations increase?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. At the beginning of the year, we would have set, you know, here are our permanent appropriations. And those appropriations is basically just a fancy word for that's our budget. Okay? And then those appropriations, we have to send those to the county auditor, which is kind of a check and balance where they compare those appropriations, they compare our budget to our actual estimated revenue or our resources to make sure that we're not budgeting or spending more than what we have. So the reason that why you're going to see, and frankly probably more and more often the way I budget is that probably each month you're going to see increases in appropriations as new money becomes available, as like it's a new grant or Maybe the PTO donates money to a principal's fund to spend that money. I can't just go spend it. We actually have to appropriate it, have it approved by the board, send it to the county auditor, who makes sure that just because I said we're going to spend this much more money, she also ensures that we actually have the resources to be able to budget at that level. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's where you were going.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Great. Okay. No more questions. We have a roll call, please.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Item 12.1, approval of moot court. Can we have a motion to approve moot court as an extracurricular competition?
So moved.
I'll second. Motion by Mr. Pleasant, second by myself. Any discussion on this? Okay. Roll call then.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Abstaining.
All right. Motion carries with Mr. Smith abstaining. Okay. Let's see. Then we move on to 13. So we have a variety of superintendent action items there, and if you go down to 13.4, that's where we have a recommendation to approve all of the superintendent action items. We have a motion. I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Ms. Devine and second by Mr. Pleasant. Any discussion on this? Diane, you want to
just
talk
a couple
about
highlights? Yep. We have BJ Adams retiring from the high school. I think that's important to know.
Yes.
And thank her for a long service. And Jane Wirtz as well, and Joe Seacrest.
Yep.
Several on there that we want to certainly thank them for the time, dedication they have given to our kids for several years. Now, I didn't do collective years. I did that a couple times last year, and people are like, oh, don't say that anymore. And I apologize, my computer died while we were sitting here. We continue, I think I say that quite often, our volunteer list continues to grow, which by this time of the year you would think it would dwindle, and we continue to add to that. Again, the bus camera systems that we discussed last time, as well as approval for the policies that were on at the last meeting.
Actually, I really appreciate the recap of those of the board policy. You know, it's kind of nice to give little highlights of what all those changes are and why they're required and that kind of stuff. And then I did have to do a little call out because I saw Jeff Mabee in there as a volunteer for Raymond. So thank you, Jeff. He just couldn't stay away. So no, we appreciate his help and as well as all the other volunteers. So. Okay. We have a roll call, please.
Ms. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Motion carries. All right. 14. Do we have any comments or questions from board members? Mr. Smith?
I would like to say that I had an opportunity to come through Bunsholder and seeing a presentation on the changes in terms of the building. You can see in this building the enthusiasm, the energy, and it's not just the kids that are provided. And so that was nice. The other thing that I would say is that the moot court program is one that I'm glad to see us expand, and I would like if we can get some other academic programs going. We've had success in this area before, and hopefully we're going to have interest from students, teachers, and so forth to increase those opportunities. And the last point, I'm very impressed with the FFA banquet awards and their new Hall of Fame. That was very nice, very well done.
Again, just reiterating every like we do every time, it's really exciting to see all the changes and all the having the Rosellis in and all of them in and just seeing this grow. It is neat to see the enthusiasm with the group here. And I also think that that goes right onto the kids, and I think that's why we're having so much success in the sports and everything else, because I think it's just, it's an absolutely contagious kind of situation that I'm so excited for my grandkids to be coming up in this time in here to just see what they're going to do.
I didn't know that was coming up.
Okay.
I didn't know that was coming up.
What?
Your grandkids.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Some of them are coming into high school next year. So, it's exciting.
Mr. Luke?
I had a couple comments. I was able to go to the high school choir concert last night and got to hear all the choirs. I was very pleased with the show choir. And Diane mentioned earlier that they've won, I think, all of their competitions except one this year, which is a record. And I could certainly see how they did that. It was an astounding performance. But the other thing I wanted to mention is all of the choirs were very impressive, not just the show choir. All the choirs at all the levels of the high school are performing at a very high level, and I wanted to say I was proud of those kids. Many, many hundreds of kids participate in that choir program, and proud of the music teachers, too. And I also wanted to mention I was able to go to a training, an OSBA training on finance, for a day, and you know, it's not the most complicated subject I've ever studied, but it's up there. I have a lot of respect for Todd and those professionals, and a lot of determination for myself that I'm going to keep at it. Mm-hmm. It's not a one-day thing.
No, it's not.
But there's a lot of resources, and I'm going to keep at it because I think finances are at the heart of keeping the school system healthy. Mm-hmm. So I was glad to be able to start my process of learning how the school finances work.
Mr. Pleasant?
I not only the swing choir, but they also had the mini swingers from the Munsell, and I mean, they can compete with any high school group also.
Mm-hmm.
I also was with the FFA, and again, that was an outstanding, they do an outstanding job, so thank you.
Okay. I was sorry, I had to miss the FFA. I was visiting my daughter. But yeah, I'm so proud of them and the choir program as well. And I also attended my first wrestling match this year before they got to the state level. But it's quite an experience, you know. But basketball games. I wish I could have gone to gymnastics. I'm just so proud of all the kids. I just wanted a kind of an FYI for our board here that the Board Leadership Institute is May 2nd and 3rd. So if you've got a chance to go to that, I highly recommend it. And Brian, you would probably be able to have a refresher on finances in one of their breakout sessions, I would guess. Also, I went to a chamber meeting this morning because I'm on that committee. And wow, talk about exciting things going on. I know they've started a new website, unioncounty.org. And so we kind of got to preview that, and you'll be glad because I did notice they were going through all the little drop-down boxes. I didn't see anything about education on there, so I said, are you going to have something about education? He said, oh, you're right. So they're going to add a link, and I think really we need to make sure that we stay in touch with Eric to make sure we get everything we want on that link and on their website. But just great things going on and just a great collaborative feeling there. So. Thank you for your leadership and congratulations to all of our teachers. And so that's it for me. Mr. Johnson?
Nothing else to add.
Okay. Mrs. Merrick, you can close it out this time. I went in a different order, but you know.
No, that's fine. It's certainly an exciting time. Just it's a lot of great things happening. Even without grant money, you can see by thinking and being innovative and being willing to try things differently, like Michelle presented today, you can create some opportunities within the resources you already have. And so I commend her and her staff for taking that challenge on.
Definitely. Great. All right.
And congratulations to all our master's teachers. I meant to say that again earlier. It's a lot of work and effort they put into that. So it's good to see all of them up here.
Mm-hmm. All right. Do we have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Mrs. Powers. Second.
Second.
Second by Mr. Pleasant. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Vine?
Yes. Motion carries, and the meeting is adjourned at 8:36. Thank you.
Thank you.